to the 35th presentation in the Parayana, and we've been looking at the origins of civilization and how it has a structure to its spiraling through time, and that civilization is a major transformation of high culture due to the appearance of written language, which could be read and written, which changed the dimensions of consciousness in the way in which Homo sapiens developed. This happened about 4350 BC. And it took a while. It took about a period of 350 years for that initial achievement of a written language discursive enough to be able to convey meaning and not just the inscription of signs to hold business accounts, king lineages, and so forth. That transformation of a written language is a symbols transformation. But the ability to command reading and writing entails a second transformation, which is alchemical term here. It's a distillation of a previous transform that was a fermentation. The previous transform came about 40,000 years ago, and it took a while for that 40,000 year ago transform to refine itself so that it had an amazing structure. The transform was the development of art. The first appearance that we know of cave paintings and of sculpture dates from about 40,000 years ago. The earliest cave in southern France, Cosquer, and so forth, date back to about 36,000 years ago. And when they were discovered, just France's second largest city, it astounded everyone because it was so close to where civilization has been very formative for quite a long time. But the entrance to the Paleolithic caves there were buried under 130 feet of water that the Mediterranean, not at all the Mediterranean Sea that we know of, and the entrance to the cave was blocked. And at the cost of several lives, brave French divers, and the French excel in diving due to Jacques Cousteau and his companions developing the aqualung and so forth. A long time ago, I remember when it first was coming out, going through what was a tunnel from the cave mouth into the cavern was not only a tunnel now silted over from tens of millennia so that it was opaqued, almost like a colloidal solution, and that several perished, but some finally got through. And the original cavern held the first patterned cave painting ritual cycle, where you could go in an ambulation around the pockets of paintings, the effects, and see that it was an initiation. It was a ceremony of complex initiation. And this was a transform that fermented the change from the old Paleolithic to the high Paleolithic, to the development of what we today anthropologically correct style as culture. Its ritual comportment structured and organized so that there is obviously an instruction, a background, a deeper meaning, a kind of a wisdom in the myths, in the mythology, in the oral language. After some very long time, the species Homo sapien has existed for about 200,000 years. And Homo sapiens first left the East African milieu about 50,000 years ago. So it took about 10,000 years coming up to new landscapes, new places, new life histories and events, and the relating of what used to happen where. And all of this built a tradition and the practice of the old and then the new and then the new became custom, so that custom is stringing together the myths, the poignant, significant ways in which the human family in these expanding bands conducted their lives and had their meaning and developed their person. And out of that came the visionary quality of being able. This is a magical, mystical dimension that was not there before and only patiently has come to be, that it is not only a viable new dimension to the time and the space of nature, but that this was accepted by nature, part of it. And that the vision in changing the way in which the natural cycle used to be created a new social refinement to the cycle of nature, and that social refinement and the rituals from nature, from the animals, from the plants, and so forth, coalesced language so that the oral language became mythic in the sense that it was able to stylize increasingly how all of this links together and has its pattern. And so there are patterns in culture. One of the great books that we use in the learning civilization is Ruth Benedict's Patterns of Culture. Sapiens, then, who were wise about being wise. Yes, the species was wise, Homo sapiens, but it became Homo sapiens sapiens, wise about being wise because of the refinement of language, because of the ability to take a transforming change so that the rituals, yet still nature-based, but they had an extra visionary dimension of magic, as they called, in whatever language they had. And that this magic required of them to have a new way of living in the world, of comporting in nature, of talking to a great French anthropologist, Claude Lévi-Bruhl, coined the phrase participation mystique, that culture in a higher form with vision and then the refinement of expressing it in images, which were the origins of art, so that with vision and art, a recursive improvement came in the rituals, which became ceremonies, with the myths that became a mythology, a practice of linking them together, and that the telling of the myths in their primacy was not done by rote. Anyone who has ever heard, quote, native speakers deliver myths understands that it is a spontaneous event. When I, as a young professor in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, 44 years ago, brought Hansen's bear paw, an old blind Blackfoot sage, a sachem, to deliver in downtown Calgary at the Indian Friendship Center. I pioneered having the college have the course half there and half downtown in the Indian Friendship Center. We had about 115 students and more than that of native peoples who came to hear, because this is the venerable sage of the Blackfoot in their Algonquin language are Siksika. One walks the way so well trodden that one's moccasins have turned black over the centuries, over the lost mists of tradition, Siksika. He spoke only Algonquin, and he spoke even though he's in his 80s, in such an original, spry, fresh way, because he had his storytelling stick, his cane, as it were. And I used to, at that time, bring a cane from Cameroon, West Africa, that was a storytelling cane from the ancient Africans. And this is the way in which the rhythm of the movement in dancing, it's called stepping, that one has a rhythm to the language that allows for the weaving, a complex weaving, not just the warp and the woof, but a complexity which avails someone who is masterful at this of scores and scores and scores of possible weavings, of possible ways, and of the patterns then that emerge in this spontaneous weaving give this visionary participation mystique. So those hearing hear in such a way that they are, and they live in not a myth from then, but from a presence now, and that the now becomes absorbed into the presence, and so a presence becomes a field of differential consciousness within which now a great transform has happened, that vision and art as two more dimensions, a fifth and a sixth dimension, so that a sixth dimensional play happens. And it is this ancient quality that was again refined, distilled out of the wine of the fermentation of vision and art into the distillation of history and science. A seventh and an eighth dimension. So that what came into play with a discursive written language that could be read, the mind became expanded, not just in neuronal networking and activities. Different languages have different areas in the brain in which they constellate their language, and the written language refines it so that it is possible, once you have learned to read and write a language, you can learn to read and write another language, other language, and other languages so that one is able to pick up a universal quality of reading and writing, of the discursiveness of a consciousness now that has a historical dimension. And that was the gateway for the development then of the ability to, through the participation mystique, to be in the presence of the animals, of the trees, of the food, the grains, and so forth, but also then to begin to transform them, to, as the word used to be, to tame them. And in the taming came the taming of ourselves, of mankind, of Homo sapiens sapiens. That the dimension of history was extremely important in the development of civilization. And so when we look at the ability for a written language to not only be discursive in the reading of it, in the writing of it, in the reading out loud of it, it took about 2,000 years from 4350 BC to 2350 BC for there to arise a world-class author, and her name was a woman, was N.A. Duana. And she was the one who was able to bring the written language of cuneiform, which had been used for business, had been used for king list, had been used in a sign way, in which had been developed so that it began to have a symbolic reading and writing ability, but she raised it to the full distillation, that is, that a poetic language written and read and understood for the very first time came into being. When that occurred, it was like a reference wave trigger, that at last it was the ability to have a poetic where the art of reading and writing reached across not only through history into the scientia, the real knowing, the detailed exact knowing, but was able to reach all the way back in a recursive symmetry, because symmetry is one of the great triumph goalposts of the way in which a universe and its cosmic origins can move, one foot after the other, one hand after the other, that there is something in a syncopation, in a rhythm, in a gesture of balance, in all of these aspects. That first reference wave had 2,000 years later an aeon of its reference wave having become a poetic. And that poetic language infused the ability for whatever written symbolic languages like cuneiform were operative, that they were now changing, they were distilling, so that one was able to use a set of symbols to overtone and to undertone, to change the very way in which a written, read language can incorporate complexity. And that came with the development of an alphabetical language about 2000 BC, which happened in two places at the same time. It happened in the ancient Phoenicians on the East Mediterranean coast, and it happened in Central Asia around Samarkand. And out of the Phoenician came eventually the linear A, which became Greek, It became the origin of Hebrew. It became the origin of many languages. And in Central Asian, the language was Avestan. And by about 1925 BC, the classic wisdom in Avestan was Zarathustra's Gathas. At the very same time, the classic written, read, alphabetical language became the vision of a promised land of Abraham to go to the origin of where the alphabetical language had started. And so at the same time that Zarathustra is writing his Gathas at age 75, Abraham at age 75 made the pilgrimage from northern Iraq around where Erbil is today to the coast where Lebanon is today in search of the promised land. And that it was recognized that there was a great development that had happened because a deeper transform had happened to the alphabetical language in the Phoenician version of it. And that is that it had contact with the ancient Egyptian hieroglyphic. And so midway between Lebanon and Egypt is that great ridge upon which stands the cities of Jerusalem and Bethlehem, and at the more ancient trade route, Hebron. And so it was in Hebron that Abraham bought his first piece of property in the Holy Land. And that marks the tent pole beginning. It was called the Cave of Machpelah, and it was bought by Abraham to be a burying place for himself and his wife and for his descendants. And they were buried there. And in 2014, August 30th, you can go to Hebron and they are still there. Of course, monumental buildings have been there. There are notable exceptions that are the burials are not there. But what happened that was extraordinary was not only that the language had become visionary and artful, so that there was a history, so that there was a lineage, but that the carrier wave of that lineage was feminine. The operative application was masculine, but the carrier wave was feminine. It's not only that the so-called patriarchy is only carried by the feminine. The same is true when you go to the inheritors of the ancient Avestan. Those persons, about 400 years after Zarathustra wrote his Gathas, I spent 10 years making a translation of the Gathas into a 21st century English poetic. Here's an example of 1925 BC poetic in 21st century American poetic. I asked that about penalties, those deceitful forced gains of evil action. O Ahura, no life honor followed. There the shepherd separates the flock. Virile and righteous is he. That's the good shepherd origin. I ask this, which is the person in whose home is Kshatra? Kshatra is an ancient high dharma transform, distillation of the fermented transform patience. This is the place of Asha's kingdom. Asha is the feminine order of life applied by the males, but continued, and the wisdom was feminine, that this is the flow of it. And without the flow of it, what are you applying? Something memorized from rote? It's not alive. The species belongs, the world belongs to the living. This is the place of Asha's kingdom. Here we try to bring about our union with Ahura Mazda. Ahura is the masculine lord of the horizon, and Mazda is the radiance of the feminine wisdom which receives all of this and gestates, generates life and its context of love. That without love, there is no life, and without life and in love, there is no civilization. And one of the themes of today is that the regressions that ensue from that are monumental. They tear apart all of the forms of civilization. And one goes back to the last time that there was stability. And in that panic, there are a couple of classic last times that are like supposed to be catch-alls, but they are nets that are torn and old, and they fray, and one falls further and further back. To say that it's barbarity is a polite term. Worse than beasts. Here we try to bring about our union with Ahura Mazda, what will be and by which deeds? And which, righteousness or deceit, you must now choose. Hire, a wise insight always awakens, not to be ignorantly astray. Be as Mazda, Ahura, teaches by revealing your pure mind. No one deceitful can be taught mantra listening. Mantra is the Avestan origin of the word mantra. There's no way that without wisdom you can hear wisdom at all. Both in city house and country village, open an exacting place to disperse destruction and death tendencies. It becomes a universal apocalypse if left untended. A resisting without weaponry. Its solution is a resistance without weaponry. No force, but a resistance utilizing a field source that is not force. What is a field source that is not force? Time. Time has forms. And in civilization, the time forms are immense, but they are finite. And they are set to re-transform, to refine. And the more that civilization developed and became complex, the more that it was incumbent on those understanding, on those living and loving in that sourcing, recognizing that it's the litmus test is the spontaneity. If you're working from a plan, you're wrong. Yes, you can plan, you can't work from it originally. One of the most incredible tearing up of custom and tradition happened in the early 1920s in Europe. And one of the great figures in that was a little Swiss man, little portly, named Wolfgang Pauli, who later on teamed up with another Swiss genius, Carl Jung, and they wrote a little book together about the great significance of Johannes Kepler's revolution of astronomy and physics and mathematics. Wolfgang Pauli received the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1945 in Stockholm. And in 1947, this original edition in English of his German language acceptance speech is entitled Exclusion Principle in Quantum Mechanics. And in this, he divulged in Stockholm in 1945 that it went all the way back to where he was a young physics professor. And he went, as he says, to an amazing event. He went to where, following Niels Bohr's invitation, I went to Copenhagen in the autumn of 1922, where I made a serious effort to explain the so-called anomalous Zeeman effect, as the spectroscopists called a type of splitting of the spectral lines in a magnetic field, which is different from the normal triplet. The spectral lines in a powerful magnetic field are affected in a way because magnetism, though related to it, is different from electrical. The magnetic will spiral around the vector of a magnetic encased electrical current, which then can be made into a line, into a wire. But the electrical field will spiral, in fact, it chirally spirals like a continuous helix around the vector of the line of the dynamic of the electrical energy, and this electromagnetism, both aspects are carried by the photon, by light. What was difficult in 1922 was the realization that something here is incomprehensible in terms of all the physics known up to that point from the beginnings, especially going back to the ancient Greeks, and eventually it produced, after the break, we'll come back a little bit, it produced a quality of wondering which was in a milieu that already had been seeded by a great historical realization. The realization came into focus in 1906, published in Chicago, Illinois, by the Open Court Press. Chicago at that time was one of the great Renaissance cities in world civilization. It's called Zarathustra and the Greeks by Lawrence Hayworth Mills, L.H. Mills, who was at Oxford and who came to the United States. And out of this, one had a great celebration in a part of East Bay, San Francisco, of Mills College in Oakland, being a great place, especially for teaching jazz. And I once lived across the freeway underpass from Mills. When we come back from the break, this first part is entitled Zarathustra, Philo, the Achaemenids, and Israel. Because Zarathustra relates to Abraham aeonically going back 4,000 years. They're tuned, they're paired. They have a quantum entanglement. They have the same distill transform refinement, 0 BC. Let's take a break. Let's come back. We're pressing the issue because it needs to have the press. Otherwise, the sour mash is not going to deliver the juice, which we're going to distill into the cognac. Let's come back to Wolfgang Pauling. Let's come back to, in his Nobel Prize for Physics speech in 1945, which was contemporaneous with the atomic bombs. If you don't understand the complexity of a seven-dimensional history, you don't understand what's going on. And what bypasses you completely is the science, and what is bastardized is the art, and what is obviated is the vision, and what is regressed are the symbols. And the mythic horizon curdles up. And you can't make any cognac out of that kind of sour mash. He writes, about this Zeeman effect, that the double splitting of in spectrographic record, the triple spreading, and on the other hand, my earlier doubts as well as cautious expression, classically non-describable two-valuedness, experienced a certain verification during later developments, as Bohr was able to show on the basis of wave mechanics. It's not that anyone had ever talked about it this way. The mechanics is about particles, about atoms, about the mechanical engineering of physics. Waves are a completely that seemed then to have a dualism. Well, is it particle or is it wave? And already Papa Bohr, which all of his youngsters, he had five sons and about 15 young physicists. He talked about wave mechanics, he was the first one, which is why then the theory is quantum mechanics. Quantum field theory. Quantum field theory. These are 20. This has a George O'Keefe cover, Blind Star, number 3. This has a Feynman ancient pharaonic cartouche cover and a preface that starts with a quotation from Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Think I'm making it up? What does it read? You have to know how to read. It's from Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. Brick is talking to Big Daddy. If you don't know the play, you're behind the times. Brick, well, they say nature hates a vacuum, Big Daddy. Big Daddy, that's what they say, but sometimes I think that a vacuum is a hell of a lot better. Is that what it was? Let's come back to Pauli. It's not a digression. It's a complex weave. It's like a jacquard weave where two different patterns, just by the slight shift in your perspective, the light catches. Allegory was first understood by people like Philo of Alexandria. Because he was literate in the Zarathustran and in the Israel traditions and the Greek and the Egyptian. Bohr was able to show on the basis of wave mechanics that the electron spin cannot be measured by classically describable experiments. As, for instance, deflection of molecular beams and external electromagnetic fields, and must therefore be considered as an essentially quantum mechanical property of the electron. Now, in 2014 and for some while, spin has been understood to be just as important as the polarity of positive and negative in electricity. Like there are electronics, now there are spintronics. And coming up, even more radical differences that put technology into the capital letter. Techne in Greek means art. So that there is this kind of an interpenetration of something that classically, describably, could not be said, could not be read, could not be written. And now the broaching is coming up to the fact, to the apocalyptic triggered fact, that time has run out of a time form in civilization on a massive carrier wave scale. And the computation here is that the trigger year was 1991. Well, what happens in 1991? And we've talked about that a little bit. Here's another thing that happened in 1991, the very first book to bring into play quantum field theory of point particles and strings. When strings vibrate in string theory, the resonances are the way in which the composition of everything else, way on down the line, up to us, moves in time. That the dynamic is a time dimension that occurs spontaneously out of a zero field, out of a vacuum, out of an emptiness. It's high Dharma Mahayana from 2,000 years ago. It's edited by David Pines, this whole series, Frontiers in Physics, and he says everything is completely new. That we are, he wrote this in April of 1991 about the series, which was new at that time and was just coming out, and for a long time, for a generation, was the carrier wave of the way in which physics was approaching the transform that has now been confirmed as has happened. The problem of communicating in a coherent fashion, recent developments in the most exciting and active fields of physics continues to be with us. The enormous growth in the number of physicists has tended to make the familiar channels of communication, chatting together, at get-togethers, etc., familiar channels of communication considerably less effective. It has become increasingly difficult for experts in a given field to keep up with the current literature. The novice can only be confused. And the general public, ignorant to an extent that they have no idea whatsoever. What is needed is both a consistent account of a field and the presentation of a definite point of view, POV, in screenplay writing. These presentations are a POV for sure, but it is ahead of the vanguard. It is in the field of the real, which plays an infinite field of consciousness with the zero field of nature in such a way that all life, all phenomenon, all love is born, emerges, and continues to emerge and celebrates very much eternity. Time is so powerfully important. There is now a textbook from the Netherlands, Time in Powers of Ten. It's like Charles and Ray Eames, The Powers of Ten book and film done back in the 1970s here in Los Angeles. They took a cue, Gerard de Hooft and Stefan van Doren, the Dutch pronunciation, Stefan van Doren, with a foreword by the great Steven Weinberg, who's at the University of Texas, Austin, and whose great three-volume book on quantum field theory is a classic. One can calibrate the powers of 10 now so that femtosecond, the time calibration by which molecular actions occur, and even faster picosecond, and even faster attosecond, by which atomic atoms have their movement in time, attoseconds. And there are many, many refinements that are much finer than that, so that atoms are rather clumsy in terms of understanding time. And all of it is not amenable to guessing, but is definitely a quality of high wisdom, understanding, possibility, which recursively gets funneled into a side branch called probability, which then gets codified into statistics, and then one runs into ignorance on a massive scale, because the statistical handling of information that is too mind-boggling so that it has to be channeled and then funneled and then put out in a Reader's Digest form for some supposed wonderful public who then know, and because they're professionals, aren't they? Are they? Are they professional? Formal monographs cannot meet such a need in a rapidly developing field, while the review article seems to have fallen into disfavor. Indeed, it would seem that the people most actively engaged in developing a given field are the people least likely to write at length about it. They're not saying anything. And this first book, Brian Hatfield was at the University of Illinois Urbana, and he contacted David Pines to let him write from his hometown in Massachusetts, and so he edited his manuscript in that American Revolution beginning place, Lexington, Massachusetts, right next to Concord, Massachusetts, not far from Emerson's house. If you don't understand the complexity of civilization in our new aeon, there is no way whatsoever that you can appreciate, here's a who's who of who met in 1923, around Niels Bohr, talking with Wolfgang Pauli in Copenhagen. The subsequent developments were determined by the occurrence of a new quantum mechanics. Then, in 1925, the same year in which I published my paper on the exclusion principle, the first publication of it, de Broglie, Prince Louis de Broglie, formulated his idea of matter waves, and Heisenberg the new matrix mechanics, after which in the next year Schrodinger's wave mechanics quickly followed. And so you have a cascade among a small coterie of companions, is the best way to put it. They're like knights of a round table raised to sub-atomic physics. Bohr's wife, Marguerite, was a classical great woman. She not only took care of Niels and his brother's family and their five children and all of these young geniuses around, but kept them into this humane feminine wisdom home environment so that they were able to not think together, not group think, but to have the spontaneous exchanges which were required then. So that with a matrix mechanics of Heisenberg, a wave mechanics of Schrodinger, the exclusion principle that Pauli came up with, many other things, and Dirac's coming in, P-A-M, Dirac, and all of this happened in this cluster. It is at present unnecessary, writes Wolfgang Pauli in 1945 for his delivery in Stockholm. At the present, it's unnecessary to stress the importance and fundamental character of these discoveries, all the more as these physicists themselves have explained here in Stockholm the meaning of their leading ideas, because they all won Nobel Prizes. There has been no Nobel Prize equivalent for L.H. Mills. Not only Zarathustra, Philo, and the Achaemenids in Israel, but all of his other work on the Avestan, language. He mentions in here that the one person that he had to talk to is Professor A.V. Williams Jackson, who did a book on the great prophet of Iran, Zoroaster. But the great prophet of Iran, Zoroaster, is of some 1,500 years after Zarathustra. A.V., by the way, stands for Abraham Valentine. Abraham Valentine Williams hyphen Jackson, whose great books, whose work, because he knew Iran inside out from its beginnings, and its beginnings are really with Cyrus the Great, about 520-something B.C., he's the one that revived, under his dynasty, Achaemenid dynasty, the ancient Zoroastrian equivalent of the writings of Zarathustra that were miraculously saved in Avestan, the Gathas. It's the only thing that Zarathustra wrote, needed to write. And 1,500 years later, in about 500 BC, 2000 BC, 500 BC, one finds the revival of Zarathustra in Zoroaster. And all of a sudden, you get an Iranian take on something that was originally Central Asian. Now, Central Asian, 4,000 years ago, is unbelievably brilliant. They had been brilliant for so long that the Western spread of what was then, the Greeks called that area Scythian, the Scythians. That curly reddish hair, they became in the far west the Celts, who in 3200 BC were already able to build a sophisticated place on the Boyne River in Ireland called Newgrange to track the midwinter sunrise and all of the other attendant calendrical things that made it possible for human cultures now to have a starry expanse, a day-night combined expanse of the way in which one could have the rhythm of time in the visible universe and measure it exactly, and that all of this went back, as we now learn, because the cognate structures in the Wiltshire Plain area of England, Stonehenge, is the origins of it, of the Stonehenge that we knew, go back to about 3200 BC. And now ground penetrating radar finds that was built on a base of 5,000 years before that of preparation, back to 9,000 BC, 11,000 years ago. Already, those coming out of the ice age glacial freeze, deep freeze that Homo sapiens had been in, now began to understand that there is a further refinement available. And not only do you pass on orally the myths in the mythic horizon, but you pass on the historical transform of the traditions and the customs so that there is the fledgling science of being able to construct things and do things to specification. That you can keep track minutely so that you can have a pattern not in construction, but in architecture. A pattern in architecture which further refines itself and congeals into sculpture, a sculptured form, extends itself resonantly in space, not physically in space, but resonantly in space. If you don't know how to approach and view a sculpture, then you need to learn. Just like the ancient pathways that led to the original Stonehenge, built out of wood originally, some 3500 BC, originally all of that was done on the basis of the approach to the site. The resonances were as important, if not more important, because the way that you approached it, your point of view had to mature so that the subtle changes and appearances all of a sudden were revelatory. And every time everyone did this and did it together, it knit together a new fabric of the way in which Homo sapiens became very wise about history and science in their fledglings. A film was made about the time that this was first published, Quantum Field Theory of Point Particles and Strings, in 1985, is when it first came out. And the film made, one of the great films made at that time, was called Iceman. Fred Schepisi, an Australian director, about discovering a man 40,000 years old in the far Arctic North who was on a vision quest and had frozen in the ice. And they found the frozen figure. Through the films, the technology of medicine, they brought him back to life. A play on the 1950 film by Howard Hawks, The Thing, only instead of The Thing being an alien from other worlds that's a threat coming in a flying saucer, it's a whole other issue. The Iceman was related to the surviving Eskimo cultures, and when they revived him, is how they found out why he was there. Because that was a wilderness even then. And now it's buried in the ice in this cave. He was looking for the spirit bird. That only finding that spirit bird would give the present spontaneous realization of it, the harmonic in resonances that would bring back to life the perishing people. It only takes one to initiate that, but it takes another to recognize it. And that's how they pair. Someone to sing and someone to hear makes a song. It's incredibly simple. another 1985 film was The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, Across the Eighth Dimension. Another was Return of the Jedi, et cetera, et cetera. There are moments in history where a cluster shows this is an incredible moment. September 2014 is an incredible moment. In the news is all the advances now of being able to go into quantum field theory, into understanding that all of the waves, all of the particles come out of a common source, and it is a source that the first appearance of it is like a plasma. It's a plasma that has the building blocks, if you will, of particles, particles as subatomically small as, they're actually pretty large subatomically, protons and neutrons. They're made of quarks, coined by Murray Gell-Mann at Caltech because he was reading James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake at the time, and that's Joyce's phrase for the tiniest, 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 most invisible of all beginnings, a quark. For that's he called them quarks, and it takes three quarks, two up, one down, to make a proton. It takes three quarks, two down, one up, to make a neutron, and that's how atomic structures, etc., move. And all this is recent. Well, in 1982, quarks, gluons, and lattices. It's all about that plasma. A third of a century ago, already published by Cambridge University Press. Michael Kreutz, where's Michael Kreutz from? The Brookhaven National Laboratory on Manhattan Island, or Long Island. It's an amazing thing. Brookhaven is within walking distance of the birthplace of Walt Whitman. It's within biking distance of the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory where James D. Watson has been for the last three generations, developing a planetary class understanding, not just discovering the structure of DNA, but pioneering the way in which a genome, and now a proteinome, is able to be engendered. All of this is happening, has happened, is continuing to happen, and there are almost no persons who are understanding this at all, at all. Here's a publication. I bought it on sale for $6.95. It was a closeout. It was originally published. Oxbow Books is in the UK near Oxford. Oxbow Books does beautiful series of volumes of the philosophic writings of Niels Bohr in four volumes, and many other avant-garde advanced physics material. This was published in 2012. It's called The Crown of Arsinoe II, The Creation of an Imagery of Authority, Maria Nilsson. Good Scandinavian name. A couple of years ago, I imagine great university libraries bought enough copies so that it was able to at least pay for the printing cost. And then they closed out the publication on a sale catalog that contained thousands and thousands of items. I knew This was really seminally important, and it is an incredible monograph. In 2014, just published by Oxford University Press, the first biography of Arsinoe of Egypt and Macedon. This is the Arsinoe II. Why is this so important? Because Arsinoe II was the sister wife of the second Ptolemy, Ptolemy II Philadelphus. He's the one who inherited from his father, Ptolemy, the city of Alexandria. He's the one that extended Alexandria back so that its whole scalar, its whole measurable resonance into a harmonic set included the Aegean and all of Egypt down into what is today Ethiopia. From Thrace to Sheba, all together, and that Alexandria is about in the middle of that. So that at the top of the Aegean, the most powerful island in ancient Greece was called Samothrace. This monograph also bought on sale, it's being thrown away. The Theori and initiates at, in Samothrace. Theori in Greek means those who are able to go into theoria, into contemplation, into theory. There at Samothrace, the entire complex of the holy gods and goddesses was redone by Philadelphus and Arsinoe, and the great rotunda of Arsinoe II was the colossal building of feminine wisdom put there in Samothrace because that's where Pythagoras' mother was the high priestess. And all of the arts and sciences of Alexandria go back to that Pythagorean watershed, that Samothracian origin that knit together with Phoenician Tyre that came together as Alexandria, and the great arch, the Propylaea, that allows those approaching to first view the great rotunda of Arsinoe II. It was built by Philadelphus to allow those approaching the experience of seeing something major. The great drum of feminine goddess wisdom, where the feminine women alive then, whenever, can together bring that wisdom into play so that everyone can behold it. More next week.